Welcome once again to the Radio Conference Call, a podcast for radio people, by radio people, and people that just love radio. And talking about radio, one of my favorite guys is on the line in Seattle with us right now. Joe Michaels, how are you?
Hey, I'm good, Randy. Great. Thanks for asking. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Glad to have you as a guest here on the Radio Conference Call. It's been a little while. I think we had dinner a couple of years ago here in Wenatchee.
That's right. Yeah, on my way to Stehekin, one of my favorite places.
Yeah, I was going to mention, we'll get to that here in a little bit, you play in a band and you often go to Stehekin.
That's true. And you know, the whole radio thing, as I found out, was because I was a frustrated musician. I loved the music. That was the first thing that attracted me. And yeah, it's just kind of interesting how that kind of hit me in the face one day. It's like, hey, you're really a frustrated musician. That's part of the appeal of, you know, playing music on the radio.
I think I can relate to that, Joe.
A lot of guys can. I mean, I remember Scotty Brink, great bass player, you know, and just knew everything about music, and all because he was a musician, I mean, and a great voice talent as well.
So, Joe, you're in Seattle now. What's the average day looking like for you? What are you up to?
Well, the average day is I do basically voiceovers for, like, radio and TV commercials or on-hold messages on the telephone. Yeah, my career's gone on hold. Yeah. But I do occasional commercials like Lee Johnson, Nissan, a Nissan dealer here, and Rich's. They do stoves and hot tubs and lawn furniture and things like that. You know, I have a few clients that I do, and some radio stations sprinkled here and there, a lot in the Midwest, mostly in the Midwest, where I'll do imaging and that kind of thing. So, you know, a little bit of this, a little bit of that, and that's how I keep it together.
And you really, really seem to enjoy every minute of it.
You know, I love every minute, man. It's like we were saying before we started the recording that, you know, I just feel like one of the most blessed people that I know.
You're speaking my language, my friend.
Yeah, I'm just so thankful, you know, that I've been able to. You know, how many people, you know, go to work and, you know, their job is okay or whatever, but how many just love their job passionately enough that that retirement is like an awful word, because it's just like, no, man, I want to do what I love to do.
And how many love it enough to do a podcast with somebody else that also loves radio?
That gets extra credit in my book, man. That's like, you've gone above the pale on that one.
Joe, yeah, you grew up in Spokane, a graduate of West Valley High School, so you're an Eagle, right?
I'm an Eagle.
What was it like growing up in Spokane?
Leave it to Beaver.
Mm-hmm.
Just very much like that. It was just such a simple time in the 1950s. And when you mentioned high school, my first flash was that I had a buddy who was really into radio. I'll start back just a little bit first, though. I started out, believe it or not, calling square dances and teaching folk dancing, basically, for the Spokane Park Department and the Spokane City Schools. And then I was 14 years old, for goodness sakes, when I was doing this. And I remember driving home with my dad one day, and he says, you know, getting behind the microphone, that's a really good thing. You know, you might want to be an MC one day, or maybe a radio announcer or whatever. And when he said that, I remember the feeling like, this old man is just nuts. That's the last thing I'd want to be, is like a radio announcer. But anyway, my buddy in high school, Jim, who lived a couple of doors away, was crazy about radio. And he met the guys at KXLY, which was a rock station then. And he would go up there and fool around in the production room. They would let him in there, and he'd make recordings and stuff like that. And then he also would make recordings in his bedroom, and he would bring them to school, and I'd go over and just, you know, joke back and forth with him. We'd take these to school. We'd go to study hall, where they had a tape player for, like, foreign language tapes and stuff, but we'd play our little radio thing from the night before that we'd recorded with music and everything, and there'd be two or three other guys in the booths, and they'd be listening to this and laughing, and, you know, we got ourselves in trouble doing that. To start off with, that kind of went on to where I got where I put a little radio station in my basement with loudspeakers from my square dance calling PA system out the window. There was a park across the window, and we stole jingles from KJRB, and I would read news out of the newspaper, and commercials, we'd make them up out of the newspaper based on the facts. And one day, across the street in the park, was Shannon Sweat with his family picnic. Shannon Sweat was the manager of KJRB at the time, and here we were stealing their jingle. And about 2 months later, they had a basketball team that went around to the high schools to play basketball. And I called up the radio station, KJRB, because I was kind of nuts about radio at this time. Jim and my buddy turned me on to it. And I said, hey, do you guys, you know, when you play West Valley, do you need anybody to, you know, like hand out towels or clean up or anything like that? And Gary Taylor, the program director, says, sure, come on up and we'll put you to work, you know. So I went up there and met all the jocks. I'd never met them before and everything. And they let me tag along with the team, and they invited me up to KJRB. I went up there. I met the general manager, Jay Shannon Sweat. And he said, you didn't have a loudspeaker out by Millwood Park like in the summertime, did you? And I thought, oh, no, I'm going to get busted for stealing their commercials. And he said, I really like that kind of initiative. I really like that kind of drive. I'm going to keep my eye on you. Before I knew it, I was working a weekend shift there, and I was working at KSPO at the country station in the meantime because I volunteered to pull music for the all-night guy. He did an all-request show, and that's how the whole crazy thing started. I went to Ogden's because they said, look, you know, you're doing weekends here, but, you know, if you really want to get into radio, you got to get a first phone. So I went down to Ogden's, got a first phone, and before I even got out of Ogden's, I got a call from Gary Taylor. He says, hey, man, I got the all-night show open, and I'm holding it for you. When are you going to be here? I said, I'll be there in a week and a half, and I was.
Not too many people walk. You were in high school, actually, when you started at KJRB, right?
I just graduated. I graduated in the spring of 68, started at KJRB in October. Just doing weekends, just a Sunday morning show. And I was just horrible. I mean, just awful. But I was working at the country station. So I'd go to the country station. They did play some pop crossover records. So I always had a good time, you know, playing Big Bad John and... Still by Jim Reeves.
So let's, as long as we're on the topic of KJRB, the Mighty 790, who are some of the great people you worked with there, Joe?
Oh, my goodness. Just so many. I worked with Charlie Brown, who was just great, so generous to me. I'd drive him nuts, you know, and he would, you know, be very patient and help me and encourage me. Gary Taylor, who I just love, who, you know, gave me the job. And Lee Smith was there, also Norm Gregory, Gary Shannon. And then when I came back from Ogden and started working full-time, Paul Freeman, Peter B. Hayes came a little later.
Hey, Joe, did you ever work with Brother Ralph Cole or Rick Hansen?
Yeah, I sure did. Worked with both of them. Ralph Cole, Rick Hansen.
Was there a guy there named Buzz Lawrence?
There sure was, Buzz Lawrence.
What was the deal with him?
Well, he just such a creative guy, unbelievable. He and Mike Dalton did nights for a long time, and I had the pleasure of working with both of them. You know, Buzz and Charlie, about the same time, were out at Eastern Washington in Dr. Howard Hoff's class, and they brought a tape up, and Maynard says that both Charlie Brown and John Maynard were on the tape. And they both got hired at KNEW at that time. Yeah, and so he was still there when I got there, but left shortly thereafter to go to KJR. But absolutely, I mean, I loved just working with him, just such a pro.
Buzz Lawrence became John Maynard.
Buzz Lawrence became John Maynard. Now he's Buzz Lawrence again Cool 107.1.
Yeah, what's the deal with that? He's back on the air in Spokane on the weekends?
Yeah, he does a Saturday morning show from 9 to 1 until Saturday afternoon. You know, he still does, he does drops and he does shtick. And he features a former Spokane disc jockey like every week. He'll do a little bit around somebody last week he did Gary Shannon. And one of his lines was, you know, when Gary Shannon was on the air, more radios were sold in Spokane than any other disc jockey. I know I sold mine.
That sounds like John.
Yeah, it's one of Maynard's lines.
Okay, so Cool FM, that's Big Bob Anthony, right? Formerly of KFRC.
And KHJ.
KHJ.
And Krim.
Krim.
Yeah. Big Bob.
97 Krim.
And he started the K-Love Radio Network, which is like the biggest network of stations in the U.S., Christian stations. They've got hundreds of them.
So how long do you stay in Spokane at the Mighty 790 KJRB?
I stayed there until 1975, and I had the pleasure of working with Bruce Cannon, Sugar Bruce.
Mm.
And he went back to Tacoma, and they had an opening in Tacoma, and I was thinking, you know, probably time for me to get out of town. And I wanted to end up at KJR, just like everybody that worked at KJRB. Well, there are a few exceptions, but most everybody, that was kind of the farm club. So I went to KTAC, and then from there went to KJR.
Who was your PD at KTAC in Tacoma?
Derek Shannon.
Yes.
And I got to work with Don Wade and Bruce Cannon and BS for the Great Northwest, Bobby Simon.
So Tacoma's 85 KTAC, and I know Derek, and I know he must have been a great program director, a great people person.
Yeah, Derek is a great guy. You know, I got along pretty well with everybody, except the general manager. That's a whole different story.
Yeah.
It was great. It was, you know, they were so involved in the community, and I remember in a helicopter with the doors wide open, you know, sitting out, looking out over Cheney Stadium when we flew in there, helicoptered in. You know, we had all kinds of promotional stuff going on, and they were just so involved in the community. It was really fun working there. I worked from 10 until 2 at night, which was not my favorite shift. Really got kind of depressed, actually, but got an offer to go to KJR after about 6 months, so I jumped at the chance. So I really wasn't at KTAC very long. You know, I regret that I couldn't have been there a little bit longer, because I think, you know, you train somebody, you get somebody in there, you don't want them to leave 6 months. But
before we leave KTAC, and everyone that I talked to that has worked with Bruce Babich or Bruce Cannon, they really say he was an amazing guy. What say you about the Sugar Bear?
Huh. Bruce, what a... Bruce was just the sweetest, most encouraging guy. I mean, he really advocated for me to get the job to go to KTAC. And just, you know, such a funny guy, you know, doing Friday's material on Tuesday and all of his great lines. And he had great numbers in the afternoon. Really, you know, just owned all of South Puget Sound. Yeah, I always wanted to return the favor. And so when I heard that the KOZI was looking for a guy, I mentioned him. And he got the job at Lake Chelan. This was later on in his career.
What's the segue from KTAC to KJR?
Well, I had been in touch with Steve West, who was my program director at KJRB. And he had been at KJR for a year or two before I moved to the Puget Sound area and KTAC. And you know, had just been in touch with him, and at one point, he knew I wanted to get to KJR, and he says, "Hey, man," he says, "we got an opening, and it's yours if you want the all night show," and I said, "I'm there, I'll take it." I just wanted to get in, you know, foot in the door at KJR.
What was it like your first shift when you cracked the mic and you get to say Seattle's 95 KJR?
It was just one of the biggest thrills, one of the biggest dreams come true. I had to pinch myself, you know. Mm-hmm. Is this really happening? Is this really me doing this? Because, you know, you think of all the giants that worked at KJR, and here this kid from Millwood, Washington, sitting in there. You go, man, these are awfully big shoes, you know, footprints here under the announcer's chair.
Steve was an awesome program director, still a great idea guy. We talked very often. What are some of the great lessons you learned at KJR 95?
It was pretty, you know, it was, the format was, in the early 70s, you know, the formats were really loose. I mean, I remember, you know, we were still playing 45 RPM records at the time, and I remember, you know, there'd just be a rack of records, and we played these, you know, so these are the ones up here that haven't been played for a while. And, you know, it was up to the KJR point. It was loose, but beginning to really get formatted in. So a lot of formatics, we had a consultant, Burkhart Abrams, you know, that would come up and talk to us. So we really sort of were really focusing in on what we needed to do. You know, we just couldn't ramble on and on. Everything had to be succinct. You know, it had to have a punchline or a ending. You had to know where you were going before you started. Couldn't just ramble around. You know, we had a lot of artists that would come through, and we could do little snippets and bits and interviews and stuff like that. And music was always my thing. So I did a show on the weekend called Words and Music that was an interview show. It was just really cool. I mean, KJR owned the city, but King was right there, and KOL had just pretty much fallen away into Compass. So Steve taught me a lot of life lessons, really. Mm-hmm. It forced me to grow up, you know, and to be responsible. I mean, Steve really knew what he wanted and could articulate it pretty well. I had to figure out what I wanted to do and be prepared, that kind of thing. Preparation was a big part, certainly a bigger part than I had done previously. Things like that, you know, that were discipline kind of things.
So, Joe, you were at KJR for how long?
A year and a half.
Then what happens?
Got fired.
Oh.
Yeah.
All right, it happens.
Yeah.
It happens.
Charlie went to Dallas. Charlie Brown went to Dallas. He was a morning guy. And I got moved into middays, which was what I really wanted to do, which I'd done in Spokane. And they brought Ichabod over, Randy Evans, and he did the morning show at KJR. Well, Charlie was in Dallas for, I don't know, 6 months, something like that, and really decided that he wanted to come back to Seattle. And, of course, KJR wanted him back. Everybody, you know, everybody loved him. So I was the guy out. You know, Randy moved into middays. I moved into the unemployment line, and Charlie came back and did mornings. KJR was gracious to me in that Kent Burkhart, you know, that I think Steve mentioned to Kent, you know, hey, Kent, you got a place for Joe. And Kent said, well, we're starting this station in Portland called Kite, which was the old Coin AM on the TV side down there, Channel 6. And Kent Burkhart said, why don't you come down to Portland and, you know, do afternoons and let her fly, let her rip. So I did.
97 Kite, just like Krim in Spokane.
Yeah. They were part of Gaylord Broadcasting, which, of course, ended up buying Opryland and had a lot of holdings in the South. That was one of their big moves, was buying Opryland.
Joe Michaels on the radio conference call. Joe, how do you like Portland? How do you like Kite?
I loved Kite. Didn't care for Portland all that much, and it wasn't Portland's fault. I loved Seattle, loved the big city. Portland was, at that time, in 1977, it was more like, I felt, had kind of the energy of Spokane, kind of just a little bit slower and everything. And I really just never quite clicked with Portland at the time. But the people were terrific. And, you know, it was all good. And everything seemed to be going well. Kite got off to a pretty good start, I thought. I got a call from Mike Phillips, who was programming KGW.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
King Broadcasting.
King Broadcasting. And Mike said, hey, he said, I got a slot that's opening up over here. Would you be interested? And I just said, no, Mike, thank you. But Kite's, they're good folks and treat me well. And I'm liking my shift and liking what's going on there. And then he said, we're buying a station in San Francisco. Would you be interested in KYA?
Oh, man.
Love San Francisco.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, so I said, oh, man, let me think about that one. And I thought about it, and I thought, oh, boy, I don't know how many shots you're going to get. At this point, you know, I'm thinking, I don't know how many opportunities I'm going to get to do these things. So I'm going to jump for it just because I love San Francisco, wanted to get to love the big cities, you know. And Portland was kind of, at that time, living down there now would be way better than I than where I was in 1977 for me. So, I jumped.
So you're at the Boss of the Bay KYA. You're going up against KFRC, Bobby Ocean, Dave Sholin, and those guys.
Exactly.
What was that like? That's challenging.
Oh, man, no kidding. What a job. I started afternoons at KYA, and the whole deal was, it was like, we're gonna throw you on the AM here until we get situated, until we get our staff hired. I was like one of the first guys that was hired. And he said, then I, this was Alan Mason. He said, then, he says, I'm thinking about you for the FM. So I became program coordinator for the FM station, which there's middle management and then there's lower middle management. And then there's program coordinator for KYA FM.
The assistant to the assistant manager.
Something like that, yeah.
Sounds like fun, Joe. How was that for you?
I loved it. I just loved San Francisco. Yeah, I loved, you know, and the radio station, again, was like KYA. KYA was battling KFRC, and Y93, KYA FM, was up against Camel, which was really hot at the time, and KSJO in the South Bay. And so they had, you know, there was album rock started in San Francisco, you know, so...
Big Tom Donahue.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so we were up against those stations.
So how do you, you're at KYA going up head-to-head against KFRC, some really a big battle there. How do you end up back in the Northwest?
I ended up getting, I was there, I started there in like October of 77 and thought, you know, if I can hang out here in San Francisco for a year or two, that'd be great. I ended up being there for 3 years, and I got put on the all-night show. I got demoted. And at that point, I said, you know, love San Francisco, but I really need to get back to Seattle. That's where my son was. I didn't want to be away from him his whole growing up time. He was about 7 to 10 years old at that time. So they said, well, would you want to go to King? And I said, yeah, I'd consider going to King. So they called King, and they had an opening within a month or something. And so I said, okay, I'll go back to King. So they shipped me up to King. I did middays on King.
So, Joe, this is after the King Top 40 days, right?
Correct. Right after the Top 40 days, they had gone to a format of soft rock and more.
Yeah.
King 1090.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yep. Murdoch was still doing mornings and still programming the station. By that time, I'd actually was working with Emperor Smith. Lee Smith had gone over as well. A good bunch of guys, good bunch of folks. We did that for a couple of years, and then they changed into a news talk format.
I want to say Super Duper Joe Cooper was there then, too.
Joe Cooper was there, exactly.
Oh, what a neat guy he is.
Terrific guy. Yeah. Still see Joe on occasion and check out his Facebook page and stuff like that.
He came over to play golf with me a couple of summers ago, and I think he had the best round of his entire life. It sounded like we were jumping up and down on the greens and on the fairways, just giving each other high fives and hugs. He loved his golf trip over here to Wenatchee, let me tell you.
Yeah, and he always posts like fishing pictures and stuff like that on his Facebook page. So I know he's into that too.
Working for King Broadcasting, Joe, was pretty huge. You're at KYA, you get to King, you develop a long-term relationship with King. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, when I was in San Francisco, I really liked the booth announcer on KBHK-TV, Channel 44. His name is Darwin Gillette. I just loved his style. I loved what was going on. And so, you know, I go to King just thinking I'm going to be doing middays at King and very happy with that. But about that time, Scott Forrest, who was doing evenings, I think he went to Portland, maybe. And so evenings were open, and he was also doing the booth announcing for King TV. So they had the King TV job was open. So I just thought, well, I'm going to steal everything from Darwin Gillette that I can possibly remanufacture, repackage, reheat, and do an audition. So I did, and I got the job, which turned out to be, gee whiz, what was I there? From 81 to 2017. So 36 years or something.
Give us a little taste of that tonight on Evening.
Tonight on Evening.
So, Joe, yeah. A lot of us are curious about this. Were you live in the booth? Were you putting these cuts on cart? How did that work?
Never live in the booth. Always would record stuff either on the cart or just put it on a digital audio tape. We worked with that a lot. And then finally, at the very end, you know, we were recording stuff into a computer. But, they'd just leave copy for me every day. And, you know, I'd go into the booth and do, you know, something every day generally. And promos, we did news promos and things like that.
It'd be stuff like Friday night on Cheers, tomorrow night on Cheers, tonight on Cheers.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah. Ellen, today at 3 on King 5.
What a neat deal. So you're getting all these stuff in your inbox. You're still working on King Radio, or has that passed?
After they went to News Talk, I went to, Cube for a while, and then I went to KSPL. When I went to Cube, I was just doing weekends, just fill-in stuff. And then KSPL, and then I think my next gig was at KCMS as the... I went to the program director of KCMS. Bob Powers was just hired by R.A. Harlan, who was the head of ABC Records for a long time, and then he ended up being the CEO of Krista, the ministry that has... it was KBIQ at that time. It wasn't KCMS. We changed the call letters of KBIQ and KGDN to KCMS, your Christian music station, KCIS, your Christian information station. And they remain to this day.
So all the while you're doing the radio jobs, you're doing this King TV thing. Did that ever evolve to where you were doing the King TV announcing from your home studio, or were you always going into Aurora Avenue?
Usually I was going into Aurora Avenue, but in the very end, you know, when technology availed itself, I was able to have a little studio here. And I was also doing tracks for K-Love, one of the big Christian, I should back up a little bit, before KCMS, I was doing tracks for K-Love, because K-Love was basically all on tracks, and it wasn't the huge network that we know it to be now. So I had kind of familiarized myself with Christian music.
Now, you talk about the Christian stations. I'm led to believe you might know my good friend Stan Mack.
I sure do. Yes, had the privilege of working with Stan for a number of years, 10 years ago or so.
Stan's a great sales consultant now, helps me with programming with Icicle Broadcasting, owned by Harriet Bullitt. So we have that in common because you worked for the Bullitt family too, right?
Exactly right. Yeah.
Joe, booth announcing at King TV, that has got to be like the coolest thing to do. Any like crazy stories, anything that accidentally got on the air and you were mortified or anything like that?
Oh my gosh. No, but it did avail me. I don't think, you know, everything was taped, so I can't think of anything that really went too foobar. But I do remember that they started this show called Almost Live. And I got to be like the first announcer, like sidekick to Ross Schaefer.
Yeah.
And I was just horrible. And I lasted like one show and pretty much got fired. So that didn't work out. But I did go in and do bits with these guys from time to time. They needed a voice or they needed, you know, I did a couple of little bits. From time to time. So I got to do some on-camera stuff, which was fun.
So was John Keister there then?
Keister was there, but I worked with Pat Cashman, and was, you know, you can't... that's always great. Pat was just so creative and such a great guy. But I'll always remember that Pat would give you a script, and it would be a lot of times handwritten, and it would be all the way to the end of the line, and then it would go up the side of the page by the margin, and then around to the top. So it's like I'm always turning the paper and reading the script, because you get new ideas as he was writing it. You'd put them in, you know. Hurry, you know, let's jump in and do this. And uh, uh, just, Oh, man, what a bright light Pat is. Oh, I mean, man. I don't need to tell you guys that. You all know that. But it was so much fun working with him. Yeah, always creative, always a blast.
Joe, wasn't there a stint at KNBQ? Because I'm thinking you worked with my dear friend Ron Arak.
I certainly did, yeah. I got a chance to work at, after I left Krista, I went to work for KNBQ, and that turned into KBSG. And that turned out to be a really successful radio station. Worked there from like 1987, 88. I was at K-Lite for a little while in between there somewhere. And then worked at KNBQ and KBSG, and that went well.
I think the world of Ron Arak, and let me tell you, and I know you know, he is one amazing talent.
Amazing guy. Just out there where the buses don't run. Just, you know, he sees, he would describe something in it, and it would be like a little movie, you know. I mean, he'd just see this stuff, visualize this stuff, and just amazing at technology and everything, and could just make anything work. I mean, his work speaks for itself.
Joe, recount some of the program directors you had, some of the things, your takeaways from all these guys, and a lot of great experiences. What were your takeaways from these guys?
Well, Gary Taylor was one of the first, and Gary was just so encouraging. Man, he was just, you know, if anybody, anytime you're feeling down on yourself or whatever, I mean, he was just so encouraging, and I never forgot that, you know, and obviously gave me a chance. West was just smart. I mean, Steve West really knew what he wanted to do, you know, strategic about doing it, but not in a real corporate way at all. I mean, it was very organic. Steve's a street fighter from Hoquiam, Hoquiam, I think, or Aberdeen. I don't know which one.
No, it's Hoquiam, yeah.
Yeah, and just gutsy. You know, Steve is just gutsy. So you learn, you know, from that. You know, boy.
All right, how about one of the guys that I have admired for so long, Derek Shannon?
I didn't spend a whole lot of time with Derek because he was there during the day. I was there at night, and I'd go in there. I'd see him a little bit, but I just didn't get to hang out with him very much.
But you knew Derek from Spokane at KGA, where he also worked with a very good friend of mine, Joe Fiala.
Exactly, Joe Fiala, yeah. And Shane.
Oh, yeah, gosh. Derek's in Centralia with KITI AM and FM. He's got a successful broadcast operation.
That's so great. I'm glad to hear it.
So, Joe, real quick, and I want to be respectful of your time here. You do a lot of commercial voiceover work. Why does everybody seem to want to put 40 seconds of copy into a 30? Just read it fast. Read fast.
Yeah. Well, you know, you just gotta move them microwave ovens. You gotta move those. what was the line in Money for Nothing?
Money for Nothing. Yeah, chicks for free.
Yeah.
You've got 40 seconds worth of copy. Do you ever have like any wiggle room to do any editing? Or
well, what I usually do is I do it the way they wrote it, and then sometimes, depending on the client, you know, I'll call them, or if I know that it's okay for me to know that I'm 3 seconds over and can just say the same thing, that the message is the same, but the wording might, you know, be a little more succinct, they give me license to do that, and I'll do it. Or sometimes I'll just say, here's another version of it. I cut a little bit because it was too long, and then if they choose that, sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. But try to give them options, you know.
Don't you find that 26 seconds worth of copy makes for a really great 30?
It does. Exactly right. You don't have to rush. You can, you know, be subtle. You know, you can give it the beats and the time and the emotion, you know. I mean, when you ask a question on a spot and then you have to edit right up to the question with the answer, you don't even give it a chance to breathe because you don't have time. You know, it just... stuff like that. You know, when you do voiceovers for a number of years, you know, you really figure out how to write them as well. And sometimes the copywriters, you know, haven't been doing it for very long. You know, you kind of know what to do.
I get a kick out of when you get a piece of copy and it's like in third person and in first person, you know, two different spots in the copy.
Yeah. Right, exactly. Hey, I just did one of those the other day.
Oh, man. Really? So are you okay with saying we instead of they, or?
Yeah, you know, at this point I am. because I understand that there was a time when I was really particular about that. And now, I pretty much give them what they want because I don't go to war over stuff like that.
You're a complete professional, Joe. You've done a lot of stuff for us here at Icicle Broadcasting over the years, always given me, a couple, three different takes, different reads. Really appreciated that, and I've learned a lot listening to your stuff.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Randy. And it's been a lot of fun working with Icicle. Especially KOZI, because that's basically who I worked with. But going up on the lake and tuning in, it's really rewarding.
So let's get to that band of yours and your trips to Stehekin. What are you doing? Did you do anything this summer?
Well, we went up to Stehekin. Our little band did, because they didn't have a dance. They canceled it because of COVID. Even though it's outside, it's on the in the orchard, and they have kind of a slab out there where they dance on. But they canceled the dance. So we went up there and just jammed. We had a really good time, tried to stay socially distanced and everything, and nobody got sick, and it all turned out great. And it's really funny because today, as we record this, I just got a call from Nick, who books Stehekin, and he's talking about summertime again. So I haven't had that conversation, but yeah, we'd love to go back up there and play.
Joe, what's your instrument of choice?
I play guitar, a little bit of bass, but mostly guitar.
So you guys are a lot of Celtic kind of music. Does that tie into the square dancing thing?
Yeah, in fact, all the traditional music from, a fiddle music basically comes from Scotch-Irish background. So what we have in this country are a lot of the classic tunes of Ireland, Scotland, England, and then, obviously homegrown as well, but pretty much morphed from that and a French influence as well.
Sounds like you guys have a whole lot of fun with that, Joe.
It's really a blast. It's awesome to be able to play for dancers, have people respond. It's just really cool.
We're going to get through this COVID situation, and get back to normal.
Randy, I'm really looking forward to it. We haven't played for a year, almost a year now. And I really miss it.
And, there's a lot of things that I miss, going out to eat, for example. I'm a hugger. I like when I see somebody that I love and care about, a handshake is out the window. Give me a hug. I miss that.
Yeah, I know. And I just wonder how tentative people are going to be with handshakes and hugs, even this year. Let's say that we get through this, hopefully within, the next few months or so into the summertime. I just wonder how we're going to incorporate that into our lifestyle.
It's going to be a little different, I think.
It's going to be different going forward, I think.
I'm tired of the masks. I'm really just tired of wearing masks. It's hard to breathe.
Yeah, I am too.
You wear glasses, sometimes. It fogs them up.
Yeah.
Joe, we greatly appreciate your time on the radio conference call. Thanks so much for joining and taking part of your day. We really appreciate it.
Hey, Randy, it's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Radio conference call with Joe Michaels. And Joe, thanks again, and hope to see you this summer sometime.
All right, Randy.